Thank you, Rob. It was great. And it's always very encouraging to me when people say things or we sing songs that resonate with what God has laid on my heart in different ways. That was a wonderful hymn we just sang. And it's great. And also that the word you brought, Rob, earlier on, about God being with us wherever we go. There is no place we can go where we won't find Him. And also speaking to Fiona before the service, about this wonderful confirmation of some of these things that I'm going to share today. And my talk today is a little unusual in the sense that it is based on a book in the Bible that stands out for this reason. It does not mention God directly. Not only that, but it also focuses on a person who is not even the main subject of the book. At least you wouldn't tell from the title. But a person whose life and principles, faith and courage are most probably the reason why the book was written. We're going to hear about a man whose steadfast commitment to his faith brought about events that changed the course of history for the people of God. The book I'm referring to is, of course, the Book of Esther. And the man we're going to hear about is Mordecai. Can we have the first slide, please? Let me give you a brief summary of the background to the events and the characters that we will encounter. King Ahasuerus, also known as King Xerxes, which is the name you will find in the NIV, who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, gave a lavish banquet in the third year of his reign. For 180 days, he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his majesty. The banquet, which he gave all the people in the capital Susa, lasted for 7 days. His wife, Queen Vashti, also gave a banquet for the women in the king's palace. On the seventh day of the banquet, the king commanded his 7 eunuchs to bring his queen with her royal crown in order to show the people and princes her beauty, for she was fair to behold, the Bible says. But she refused to come at the king's command. The king was enraged, and his anger burned within him. Then the king consulted the experts in the law and justice about what was to be done to Vashti, according to the law, for disobeying the king's command. This was a nation ruled by law. And the experts gave this response in the presence of the king and his princes. And we find this in Esther chapter 1, and reading from verses 16 to 20. Queen Vashti has wronged not only the king, but all the princes and the peoples in all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the conduct of the queen will become known to all women, causing them to despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes ordered Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she did not come. This very day, the noble women of Persia and Media, who have heard about the queen's conduct, will say the same thing to all the king's officials, resulting in much contempt and wrath. So, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree, and let it be recorded in the laws of Persia and Media, so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti shall never again enter the presence of King Xerxes, and that her royal position shall be given to a woman better than she. The edict the king issues will be heard throughout his vast kingdom, and so all women, from the least to the greatest, will honor their husbands. Strangely enough, the New Testament tells us the same. Shall we have the second slide, please? Over time, the king's anger abated, and his attendants proposed that a search be made for beautiful young virgins, so that the one who pleased the king would be made queen in place of Vashti. Among the young virgins taken to the palace was a lady called Hadassah, who we know as Esther. She was the daughter of Mordecai's uncle, but she had been adopted by Mordecai as his own daughter when her parents died, and this probably happened when she was still very young. In all probability, Mordecai had never married and had no other close family except for Esther, and you'll see why I say so in a few minutes. Given what we know about him, he must have been a very strict father who stuck rigidly to his principles. You could almost say, also, that Mordecai lived for Esther. She was his whole focus in life. And the Bible tells us in Esther chapter 2 and verse 11 that every day Mordecai would walk back and forth in front of the court of the harem to learn about Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. Every day, rain or shine, Mordecai was out there trying to learned something about Esther's situation. Now, while she was growing up, I'm pretty certain that among the rules Esther had to follow at home were these. No mobile phones. No boyfriends. No lipstick. No TV. Bedtime at 9 p.m. She had to keep her room tidy and clean, and she had to do the washing up every day. And she obeyed him. Clearly, she knew that he loved her and only sought the best for her. So she trusted his judgment, though I'm sure there were many times when it was hard for her to do so. There was one more rule she had to keep. She was not to tell anyone who her people were. Why? Because Mordecai said so. That was all she had. Mordecai said so. Now she was a beautiful woman, and she found favor in the eyes of everyone who saw her. She was a credit to Mordecai and the strict upbringing he had given her. You see, the truth about a woman's attractiveness is that it comes not from her appearance, but from her character and good judgment. And if you don't believe me, turn to Proverbs 11 and verse 23. It says, like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. Queen Vashti proves the point. Long story short, despite the intense competition from all the other beautiful women, Esther became queen. And the king held a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his officials and servants. However, she kept her family background secret. For though she was now a married woman and queen of the land, she continued to obey Mordecai just as she had done when he was bringing her up. She had a humble and submissive spirit. No wonder she gained favor with God and with man. In Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 22, you will find these words. These are the ones I look on with favor, those who are humble and contrite in spirit, and who tremble at my word. Can we have the third slide, please? Once, when Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, he learned of a plot to assassinate King Xerxes. He informed Queen Esther, who then told the king on Mordecai's behalf. When the matter was investigated and found to be true, the plotters were executed and the matter recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. After these events, King Xerxes promoted Haman, son of Hammedatha, above all the other princes. All the royal servants at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to him, as the king had commanded. All, that is, except Mordecai. Then the king's servants at the king's gate asked Mordecai why he refused to obey the king's command. He told them that he was a Jew and could not do so. Mordecai, once again, stuck rigidly to his principles, even if it meant disobeying the order of the king. He considered it more important to obey God rather than men. And we need to ask ourselves how committed we are to what we claim to believe. Is your faith in God absolute, in that you believe what his word says, and therefore will not compromise if asked to go against what you believe? Or do you think the Bible merely has guidelines for us? Guidelines that we can modify to suit the times and the situations we find ourselves in. Only you can answer that. But let us remind ourselves of how some New Testament believers handled a similar situation. After the apostles had been arrested and jailed and forbidden by the authorities to preach in the name of Jesus, they were set free by an angel and commanded to go back and preach. And then they were brought before the council. And Peter and the apostles answered the council, "We must obey God rather than men." Acts chapter 5, verse 29. We must obey God rather than men. So this is a situation that believers have faced over centuries. Mordecai, the man of principle, would not budge, and he was eventually deported to Haiti. The matter was escalated, and things didn't look good for the Caliphate. Haman was the second most powerful man in the kingdom, and when he heard this report, he then noticed Mordecai, and the fact that he neither bowed down to him nor paid him homage, and it made him furious. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. If you turn to Esther chapter 3 and verse 6, it says, "When he learned the identity of Mordecai's people, he scorned the notion of laying hands on Mordecai alone. Instead, he sought to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the kingdom of Xerxes." This was a very serious development. And then reading from verse 8 of the same chapter, Haman then informed King Xerxes, "There is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples of every province of your kingdom. Their laws are different from everyone else's, and they do not obey the king's laws. So it is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will deposit 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury to pay those who carry it out." The king was probably a very busy man with full confidence in his second in command, gave Haman the go-ahead. Letters written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring were sent to all the provinces, stating that all the Jews, young and old, women and children, were to be annihilated on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. Now, think about it. The laws of our God are different from everyone else's, and they take precedence, in our view, over every human law, regardless of where we live. Where human laws contradict the laws of God, we must obey God. But we should know that there may be a price to pay for being faithful to God. Jesus told us, count the cost. Shall we move to the fourth slide, please? When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes and went into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. Now, you may be a committed Christian, longing to go to heaven, but it doesn't mean you're eager to die before your time. And there may be situations you will face that will really bring you to your knees in prayer. So this man, who wouldn't compromise his principles, is there in the city, weeping loudly, bitterly. In every province where the king's edict came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. This was a tragic situation. Mordecai knew that Haman was the one behind all this. He knew that Haman hated him personally, and that this was his revenge for Mordecai not bowing down to him or trembling in his presence. I'm sure that there are people who would say that this is all Mordecai's fault, that his obstinacy had now brought disaster to all the Jews. If he had obeyed the king's command, none of this would have happened. After all, doesn't the Bible say that we have to submit to the ruling authorities? If you turn to Romans chapter 13 and verses 1 and 2, you'll see these words. Let every person, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. The Bible is clear on this point, but those of you who are still awake will point out the fact that Mordecai didn't have a life. But as I said earlier, where human laws go against what God has commanded us to do, then we, like the apostles, must obey God rather than men. Eventually, Mordecai sent a message to Esther, telling her to go to the king to beg for mercy and to plead with him for her people. This troubled Esther greatly. She had never disobeyed Mordecai, but what he was now asking her to do could cost her her life. She sent him a message saying that if she or anyone else approached the king in the inner court without being summoned, there was only one law. The person would be put to death unless the king extended the gold scepter to that person. Moreover, she had not even been called to go to the king for the last 30 days. Mordecai responded with those immortal words found in Esther chapter 4, verses 12 to 14. Actually, from the middle of verse 13, he said, "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Esther, submissive and obedient as ever, had to trust Mordecai's judgment as never before. Though he had always been so strict with her, she knew that his orders and his counsel had always only resulted in her good. Her response to Mordecai was no less dramatic. Esther chapter 3, verse 16. "Go, gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." The stakes were very high. If she did nothing, Mordecai would soon be dead, along with many others, and it would only be a matter of time before she too was killed. And possibly for the first time ever, Mordecai found himself taking orders from Esther, and he went and carried out all her instructions. Slide number 5, please. On the last day of the fast, Esther approached the king in the inner court, and he extended the gold scepter to her. Divine favor was upon this humble and courageous woman. She found favor with God and with man. Even before she spoke, the king said that whatever it was that she desired would be granted her, even up to half the kingdom, half of his kingdom, before she spoke. Esther invited the king and Haman to a banquet she had prepared for them, and the invitation was immediately accepted. But she felt unable to tell the king what was on her heart that day. So she invited him and Haman again to another banquet the following day. Haman left, happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai, he was filled with rage and resentment against him. But he restrained himself, went home and called his friends and wife together and boasted about his wealth, his sons, all the honors he had received. But he said, "All this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate." His wife and friends advised him to have a gallows built 50 cubits high, that's about 75 feet high, and to get permission in the morning from the king to hang Mordecai on it. This delighted Haman. The gallows were built. Mordecai had less than 24 hours. But that very night, the night before Mordecai was to die, the king could not sleep. He asked for the Book of Chronicles to be read to him. The plot against him, which had been exposed by Mordecai, was found recorded there. The king also learned that nothing had been done for Mordecai, for saving his life. And to see how God intervenes in the affairs of men on behalf of those who are faithful to him. Sometimes I call him the God of the last minute. Because there are times when it looks as though it's almost too late before you see the hand of God. But in reality, he has been at work all along. And the Bible tells us in 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 9, "For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. Nothing escapes his gaze. Least of all, the ones who are faithful to him." Just then, Haman arrived to ask the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows. But before he could speak, he asked him, "What should be done for the man whom the king is delighted to honor?" Haman thought to himself, "Whom would the king be delighted to honor more than me?" So he answered the king, listing all the honors that he believed he should receive, the honors he thought he deserved. The king listened and then said, "Go and do all that you have said for Mordecai the Jew, sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have suggested." So Haman had to robe Mordecai, the man he hated, with the king's robes, and parade him through the city square, crying out before him, "This is what is done for the man whom the king is delighted to honor." After this, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. The humble man just returned to his normal life. But Haman rushed home, his head covered in grief. He told his wife and friends all that had befallen him, and they said to him, and this time I quote from the RSV, they said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not prevail against it. but will surely fall before him. I'll repeat it. Maybe it's a head of state somewhere who needs to hear this. If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. Now, hear the words of people who did not know God. Sometimes it seems that unbelievers have greater faith in our God than some Christians do. And we see examples of this in other places in the Bible. But note God's timing. Sometimes it's only when it's at the last minute, or when, humanly speaking, it is already too late, that we see his hand at work. God's silence in our time of distress does not imply his absence. Shall we move to the sixth slide, please? Haman was now whisked away to the second banquet Esther had prepared, and there she made her petition known to the king, that her people should be saved and spared from the annihilation that had been decreed. The king was furious when he heard about it, and he asked who had presumed to devise such a scheme. And Esther answered, "The adversary and enemy is this wicked man, Haman." Esther chapter 7, verse 6. We're sweeping through the whole book quickly. This wicked man, Haman. Haman was terrified because he realized that a terrible fate awaited him. As he was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining to plead for his life, the king returned from the garden and exclaimed, "Would he actually assault the queen while I'm in the palace?" As you know from protocol, you're not meant to touch the queen. Then one of the king's eunuchs said, "Haman has built a gallows 50 cubits high at his house for Mordecai, who saved the king's life." The king said, "Hang him on it." That was the end of Haman. Proverbs 11 and verse 8 says, "The righteous person is rescued from trouble. It falls on the wicked instead." And again, I can think of people like Daniel, thrown into the lion's den. He came out. People who engineered that situation were thrown into the same den. They did die. Let us have confidence in our God. Mordecai stood firm in his faith and did not bow down to evil. God delivered him and had Haman hanged on the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. Slide number 7, please. That day, the king gave the house of Haman to Queen Esther, and she set Mordecai over it. Now, God made a promise to Abraham in Genesis chapter 22 and verse 17. I quote, "Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies." Another translation says, "Your descendants will possess the gates of their enemies." God's promises are true. His word cannot fail. Mordecai then came before the king because Esther had now told him how Mordecai was related to her. The king took off his signet ring. That was a ring of power, the ring that had been on Haman's finger, and he gave it to Mordecai. In one day, Mordecai went from being a man about to be hanged to being a man with royal authority and power and honor. Can you think of anyone else in the Bible who went through a similar thing? And let me tell you, God only elevates the faithful ones in such a way. And for everyone who is faithfully walking with God today, there are greater honors than what Mordecai receives awaits us. So, with the king's permission, Mordecai commanded, because now he was the one in charge, commanded that another edict be written concerning the Jews, because the danger was still present. The edict of the king, which were law, could not be revoked. So Mordecai commanded that another edict be written concerning the Jews to be sent to all the 127 provinces, giving them the right to defend themselves and to annihilate any armed force that might attack them and to plunder their goods. Mordecai sealed it with the ring on his finger and made it law, a law that could not be revoked. And couriers mounted on swift horses sent the letters to all the provinces. And I love the next part. The Bible says in Esther chapter 8, verse 15, Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal garments of blue and white, with a large gold crown and a purple robe of fine linen. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. God, the God who intervenes at the last minute, turned their mourning to dancing. And the man who would not compromise his faith and his principles went from sackcloth and from being on death row to being glorified in a single day. And in the end, because of Mordecai, the Jews were able to defend themselves against their enemies, and they destroyed those enemies. No one could stand against them, because the people of all the other nationalities were afraid of them. And all the nobles of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and the king's administrators helped the Jews, because fear of Mordecai had seized them. Mordecai was prominent in the palace. His reputation spread throughout the provinces, and he became more and more powerful. Esther chapter 9, verses 2 to 4. This man became more and more powerful. When you think back that the fact that only a short while before he was walking around in sackcloth, God is the God of the impossible. The sons of Haman were also slain and hanged, just as their father had been. And the book of Esther concludes with these words: For Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all his people. He used his power for good, the good of his people. Last slide, please. And thank you for listening so patiently. Our world is as hostile to the people and the things of God as it was in Mordecai's day. Ungodly people in high places are advocating things we cannot accept or practice as Christians. Will we, like Mordecai, stand firm in faith? We have seen the outcome of Mordecai's principled life, his steadfast faith, and how God, while called the God of the last minute, intervened on his behalf and delivered and elevated him with honor and power and glory. The Bible makes it clear that God will allow our faith to be tested. If we panic and abandon the way of faith and compromise with the world in order to save our skins or our necks, that would be a disaster from which we may never recover. Remember Jesus' words in Mark chapter 8 and verse 35. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. Faithful Christians have many adversaries. It has always been so. Psalm 37 verses 12 and 13 say, The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. You can imagine the laughter that erupted in heaven when Haman built his gallows, because God knew exactly who would be swinging from it soon, and it wouldn't be Mordecai. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 35 and 36 say, So, do not throw away your confidence, it will be richly rewarded. Every child of God here, do not throw away your confidence. Things may get tough, but don't throw away your confidence. There is a rich reward that awaits you. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what He has promised. So let us encourage one another every day to stand firm in our faith, even when it is hard. Soon, God will step in to reward the righteous and to repay the wicked. For everyone who does good, there will be glory, honor, and peace. Romans 2:10. I'll conclude with the words of Jesus himself to one of the churches that you find in the book of Revelations. Revelation 2:10. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. No matter what the trial is, the words of Jesus to us, be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. It's far greater than anything we can see. And he said, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the church.